שלום ליהודים, שלום לבני נוער שלא מגויים. It's the evening of the fourth day, כף גמל בסיוון פרשס קורח, שטף שיניים. וואו, the evening of the third day, Tuesday, 28 June 2016, webcasting from the cauldron of the high ground of Judea, where sermonizing is easy. So the top story in Israel today was the Turkey deal, the reestablishment of diplomatic relations after 6 years, and one hopes future military relations. Exposed were the terms of the deal, and it got a lot of criticism. Criticizing is easy. Israel is going to fork over $20 million to a fund in order to play the game. It is not compensating directly the 9 families of the victims of our soldiers defending themselves on the Mavi Marmara. We all saw the video of our boys descending on ropes from a helicopter and being attacked with iron bars and knives even before they touched down on deck. In the run-up to today's agreement, it was revealed the other day that the military plan used, obviously a failure, had won out over a different plan, Yoav Gallant. He came up with that. His idea was not to drop from a helicopter down onto the deck, but to surround the Mavi Marmara with lots of other boats carrying hundreds of Israeli commandos who would board the old-fashioned way. For sure, the failure of the plan that was used began with a misconception of what our soldiers would find on the Mavi Marmara, evidenced by packing only paintball guns. This should not overly surprise, because it's not unusual for Israelis not to sense the depth and the power of Jew hatred and what Jew haters are capable of. It also may have reflected an Israeli cockiness, a belief that once the IDF commandos dropped down onto that deck, which they legally had the right to, those aboard would play by the rules and obey their instructions. Obviously, no one thought that as they descended on ropes, those aboard would begin beating them with iron bars that they had blowtorched off ship's rails and stabbed them with knives. And the failure of the mission, I say, is evidence of a continuing Israeli deficit, which is ignorance of the power and utter irrationality and hatred directed at us. Bibi may understand this, though, for this deal may reflect, I have a hunch, an underlying acceptance on his part of the reality that there's nothing we can do to change the minds and hearts and emotions of our neighbors, these Muslims, these Turks and Iranians, these Arabs. And from time to time, they have their tactical victories. The $20 million also buys from the Turks the end of threatened lawsuits against our leaders and heroic soldiers. It's the price we have to pay from time to time. Consider it a defense expenditure, if you like a new weapons system. The Turks are, you know, the godfathers of the infamous Barbary pirates. Those pirate states, as they were called, were Morocco, Algiers, Tunis, and Tripoli in Libya. Morocco was an independent sultanate, but the other three were tributaries to the Ottoman capital in old Constantinople, renamed Istanbul by the Muslims. Like the Canaanite name Shechem, next to which the Romans built a new city and called it with a Greek name, New City, Neapolis, which is mispronounced by the Arabs who have no P in their language. After they overran it, they called it Nablus. Likewise, Istanbul, the Greeks claim, is a perversion of the Greek phrase Stinpoli, meaning in the city. Islam is a culture of theft, religion of theft too. And it's from Istanbul that the Ottoman Sultan looked out upon the other three port cities on the North African coast as tributaries, as colonies, and in fact, a Barbary cruiser, pirate ship, commonly flew at its masthead three flags, not the Jolly Roger, three flags vertically stacked. The lowest was the pennant of the local pasha or bay in the city the ship had sailed from. In the middle was the flag of the Sultan in the Sublime Port, as Istanbul was nicknamed, and topmost was the green flag of Islam. The ruling class in the Barbary cities were Turkish Janissaries, a kind of military caste, and in their universe, hijacking Christian vessels and enslaving the passengers and crews was part of the jihad. 36 years ago, I unearthed the truth of the Barbary pirates, who were not pirates, but commonplace Muslims waging jihad. Pirates was only a nickname. In their own eyes, they weren't pirates. They were Mujahideen and said so. And they were not pirates who drank rum. These are Muslims. No alcohol. They prayed to Mecca 5 times daily when on land, like everybody else. When at sea, they were obligated only 3 times daily to pray toward Mecca. I went to publishers, that is to a fancy schmancy agent who went to publishers, but no one wanted to publish my amazing research. Those of you who have read my book can see I favor mountains of details. Well, I did that for the Barbary Pirates, too. Researched it for 3 years, even went there to the Barbary Coast, visiting over a couple of months in Morocco and Algeria and Tunisia, but not Libya. This was early in the Reagan presidency, gunning for Gaddafi from the get-go, and the State Department warned Americans that Libya was off-limits. So I went to publishers with one amazing fact after another, but commonly they are of the liberal political persuasion, and the idea of criticizing a third world regime, well, was shocking, politically incorrect. The U.S. had just been through the hostage crisis with Iran, which the Iranians claimed was payback for American aggression, so to present a history of the U.S. in the Middle East as a perfectly innocent victim of Muslim aggression, which it was when the hijacking started in 1784, that was outside the purview from inside their liberal cocoons. So when Israel Today makes this deal with Turkey, it's admitting that we have been blooded and mugged by our neighbors. And if we have to fork over $20 million to restore peace and quiet, it's a business expense. The anger in Israel at the deal is righteous, but it is easy to pass judgment, unless so to navigate in the infested waters of our environment, swarming with Muslim sharks, which is what the Prime Minister and the Cabinet have to do. In his remarks about the agreement, the Prime Minister repeatedly used vocabulary right up front, indicating the security and defense factors, which he did not detail, and that played a role in the decision. There are issues far greater than the incident itself. Yair Lapid this morning gave a wonderful radio interview in which he accepted the complexity of Israel's position and was less inclined to badmouth the agreement than, say, Naftali Bennett, who, of course, lashed out at what many feel is surrender on Israel's part. We didn't get back the bodies of 2 soldiers being held in Gaza and 2 Israelis who are there under strange circumstances. I used to feel the same way at Israel capitulating in such circumstances, which we've done numerous times, but lately I think there is a subterranean, subconscious hope on my part that leads to that, the hope, like other people, that our behavior can influence the other side. We can manipulate the enemy. If we stand strong on our principles that we don't pay for this extortion, then we'll be in a better shape and it will help change things. Lapid, in defending the agreement, was clear that nobody in Israel thinks our boys who landed on the Mavi Marmara are war criminals. Nobody thinks we owe the Turks 1 shekel of monetary compensation. What kind of sick anti-Semitic nonsense is that, anyway? Muslims attempt to murder Jews. The Jews fight back and kill their attackers, but now the Jews have to pay compensation for defending themselves? This is like the mentality of the Jizya tax in historic Islam. The annual fee Jewish communities had to pay to continue to be allowed to be Jews. So I have a hunch that the Prime Minister, who's never been on the left, has no hopes of ever getting the Arabs to change. There is nothing we can do to placate them or trigger a change of heart. All we can do is defend ourselves and must pay for our self-defense in blood and treasure from time to time, which the $20 million is part of that. The Turks live in a society of domination and submission, humiliation, ego, pride. Life is an endless arm-wrestling match for these people, those who dominate and those who kowtow to them. Israel demanded Turkey expel Hamas as part of the deal. The Turks were adamant they would not do that, though they indicated they would not let Hamas plot future Jew-killing escapades, like the kidnapping of the 3 boys 2 years ago, which is engineered from Hamas in Turkey. But as far as pushing them out altogether, Erdogan will not do that. Hamas is the Muslim Brotherhood, and so is de facto Erdogan. The Jews have no right to an independent state, men like him believe, in which believers are a minority ruled over by Al Yehud. Horrors. And so Hamas has the holy right to Jew kill whenever it wants. But Bibi also held fast to the blockade of Gaza, which the Mavi Marmara episode was all about, running that blockade. The most Erdogan got out of Bibi on Gaza was the right to send humanitarian aid through Israel via Ashdod port. We'll check everything that comes in. And to build a power and desalinization plant for the locals. That won't hurt. Also in play is the cornucopia of gas that Israel has discovered, which the Turks now want to buy rather than continue to depend on their eternal enemy, Russia, to supply them with this natural gas. We can also think of the $20 million as tribute, a bribe to the eternally barbaric Ottoman Sultan, to bribe him not to drag our heroic commandos and politicians into international courts. Turkey today, under the Muslim brother Erdogan, is the same old of centuries gone by, only in modern dress.
שזופת שמש לחוצת פטרוסים מרודי התנובר מטללי רסיסים האלה עונה בעת רצון עמוסים מגנו לכל החוסים שזופת שמש לחוצת פטרוסים מרודי התנובר מטללי רסיסים האלה עונה בעת רצון עמוסים מגנו לכל החוסים שלח רוחך הטוב להחיות גביינו לקדמותה תשיב נחלה ציוויינו ממך טוב לכל ילמד זה פי מזון לכולם שנתנו תיאטר באב מלכוש ותושלם והשמיים ייתנו תלם רקמה למלות ורסיסי ברכה לחם לאוכל ומרפא וארוחה היות הוגדת נסוחה ככוכבים בהילה להחיות גביינו לקדמותה תשיר נחלה ציוויינו ממך טוב לכל ימצא ציוויינו הלא אתה תשוב תשוב
Speaking before of Yair Lapid, who spoke so well this morning on the radio in support of the deal, instead of joining the reflexive opposition politicians who, of course, bashed the prime minister and the cabinet for the terms of the deal. He also spoke so movingly of his visit yesterday to Ir David, meaning City of David, meaning the earliest settlement south and below the Temple Mount. He and M.K. Mickey Levy got a guided tour by the site's director, David Be'eri. It's a site that is also politically controversial, having been in Arab possession between 1948 and 1967. Doing the archaeological excavation And the return of Jews to living in the area has angered the world, of course, evidenced by the mountains of paperwork bearing the record of deliberations at the UN over Israel's rule of this spot and other spots since 1967. There's no topic in the UN talked about more than Israel and its racist, fascist, imperialist occupation of land belonging to the ancient Palestinians for thousands of years. I hope you all realize, by the way, this narrative is nothing but identity theft. As Islam stole Judaism, so Palestinian nationalism stole the Zionist narrative, the identity of the Jewish people in this land, the exile, the victims of a racist doctrine, the desire for this homeland to be independent again. Christianity and Islam do not exist without the preceding history of the Jews, whose original constitution, the Five Books of Moses, begins with the history of the Jews, with Hashem's call to Avraham to go to a country that Hashem will show him. This is the first conversation between them. And then the Jews are created over the next five books, and they end with Moses, the last verses, 500 years later, seven generations later. Moses, Abraham's great-grandson's great-grandson, is standing on the east bank of the Jordan River and gazing into the land promised to his great-grandfather's great-grandfather. Judaism is about the promise of this land to the seed of Jacob, Israel, and the rules and regulations God wants them to live by. But since the wild and woolly 1960s and 70s and 80s, the world has basically, at gunpoint, been told this land really belongs to another ancient people that has been living here for thousands of years, and before World War II, after which Jews just barged in and stole it from them. And here is Yair Lapid, the epitome of a secular Israeli whose father mocked Jewishness, that is, the religion, starry-eyed over his visit to this remarkable archaeological site, saying this, quote, "This place, the love you put into it," referring to the director, "the magic that is here are the proof that the desolation is always temporary and the rebuilding is eternal. Jerusalem will remain the united capital of the Jewish people forever and ever. We did not return to our land after 2,000 years to lose it again," close quote. Well, maybe there is hope when such an otherwise de-Judaized Israeli talks this way. More hope than what Dennis Ross represents, the diaspora Jew. You all know Dennis, former peace processor, under James Baker and other mentors. He worked for different politicos and presidents. As a boy, Dennis was born to a Jewish mother and a Catholic stepfather who raised him. He was raised with no religion, had no religious life. He grew up in Marin County, you know, on the other side of the Golden Gate from San Francisco, which is about as far from the Middle East as one can get. But as he tells it, he became religious after the Six-Day War, and by that he means he joined a conservative synagogue. In Washington, he became a successful IBJ, an Inside the Beltway Jew, expressing views on Israel professed by the white Anglo-Saxon Protestants who dominate at the State Department. He worked with Martin Indyk, destined to become one of the most important Jew boys of the generation. Anyway, Ross played the good cop to, at least Ross played the good cop to Indyk's bad cop, and Danny Kirch's bad cop, and Richard Haas's bad cop in the State Department. The Department of Jew Boys, that is. And in truth, he has more empathy for the people of Israel than those others who prostitute themselves for financial security and prestige inside the Beltway. Ross went on, after leaving the government, to raise money for himself and create what he called the Jewish People's Policy Planning Project, and looking into the future of the Jewish people. He was in policy planning at State Department, and he invents one for the Jewish people once he leaves. He has an office here. Anyway, yesterday, J-Post reported that Ross's Institute presented to the Cabinet on Sunday its, quote, 12th annual assessment of the situation and dynamics of the Jewish people. His co-chairman, Israeli Avidon Bar-Yosef, told the Post that while there is significant support for Israel in North America, it isn't compensating for the young generation of liberal and secular American Jews, which is increasingly critical of the Jewish state and concerned that Israeli society is becoming more religious and more right-wing. Dennis recommends follow-up measures for the Birthright and Masa alumni, must be drastically increased. Those are two programs that provide freebie trips to Israel for mostly non-religious young Jews, I think. He evidently was asking for more programs to entice them to reconnect to Israel after their birthright experience. But this is all wrong. This is Ross's perception of Israel becoming more religious and more right-wing, in his words, as the cause of this disaffection by the younger generation. Israel in this construction of reality is causing young Jews to distance themselves, and that is not good. So Dennis counsels follow-up programs for Birthright alumni. It occurred to him that this alienation from Israel has far more to do with the resurgence of naked anti-Judaism and the absence in the hearts and minds of these de-Judaized young Jews of any knowledge of what Jews believe and how they have lived for thousands of years and continue to live. It's likely the young people he has in mind spend no more than a few hours every year doing something Jewish, attending a Passover Seder or fasting on Yom Kippur, but otherwise they are defenseless against the charges of contemporary anti-Jewry, which is just this generation's mutation of ancient hostility to the people of the book, that Dennis and the young people he is thinking of do not see.
Shalom Aleichem, Malachi HaShalom, Malachi Elyon. Mihi Melech, Malchi Amlachim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Shalom Aleichem, Malachi HaShalom, Malachi Elyon. Mihi Melech, Malchi HaMlachim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Shalom, Malachi HaShalom, Malachi Elyon. Mi Melech, Malachi HaMlachim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Boachem LeShalom, Malachi HaShalom, Malachi Elyon. Mi Melech, Malachi HaMlachim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Baruch Hu Ni LeShalom, Malachi HaShalom, Malachi Elyon. Mihi Melech, Malachi HaMlachim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Baruch Hu Ni LeShalom, Shalom, Malachi Elyon.
צאתכם לשלום, מלאכי השלום, מלאכי עליון. מי מלך מלכי המלאכים, הקדוש ברוך הוא.
You're listening to www.deprogramprogram.com, broadcasting from the hills of Judea. I'm Shai Ben Tekoa. We ended the last segment with the thought that the charges made against Israel these days, which surely play a role in driving de-Judaized young people even further away, was just this generation's mutation of ancient hostility to this people. Take, for example, the wholly unoriginal thinking of Ban Ki-moon, chosen by the movers and shakers in the UN to be Secretary General, an institution dominated by the 30% of member states that are officially Muslim. He will never say anything that offends them. He was here yesterday and spoke at Tel Aviv University and cautioned not to allow, quote, extremism on either side to fuel the conflict. Palestinian and Israeli leaders must stand firm against violence, terror, and incitement, close quote. Not only is this morally corrupt, positing a moral equivalence between us and these barbarians who attack us all the time, it is language divorced from the truth of history. When did Palestinians ever stand firm against violence, terror, and incitement? These savages glorify violence, terror, and incitement. Just about every day, PMW posts a translation of an official PA newspaper item worthy of Mein Kampf. Has this lifetime never heard of the jihad as an essential belief in Islam? He condemned the occupation for undermining regional peace. Yeah, this was the takeaway by Jimmy Carter in his book, his first book after being driven from office for his mishandling of the Middle East, in which he reported on a whirlwind tour back in the Middle East of all the Arab countries in which the government in every case told him the reason for all the woes and instability in the Middle East was the Israeli persecution of the ancient ones. And this idea remains alive in too many minds, for sure in Paris. At the beginning of the month, those 28 foreign ministers gathered to point the finger of guilt at Israel for the lack of peace, not only in Palestine, but the region as a whole. Ban Ki-moon claimed that, quote, nearly 50 years of occupation has had a devastating impact on Palestinian lives and undermines the belief in a peaceful resolution to the conflict. Yeah, the devastating occupation, he says, has undermined belief and a peaceful solution among the ancient Palestinians, who apparently he thinks yearn only for the end of the occupation, and never mind all their official documents that show a future state of Philistia going way beyond the West Bank to include all of Israel, maps that don't show Israel at all. A devastating impact, he said. The occupation has had this on the Palestinians. Devastation like having a much longer life expectancy, a plummeting infant mortality rate, the building of schools that did not exist before 1967, a major rise in their standard of living. Their murdered chieftain Abbas just last week in Brussels complained of Israel's massacres. The accusation of genocide is commonly thrown about, and never mind the population in Judea and Samaria. The Arab population has grown fourfold since 1967. In other words, this UN flunky does not know what he's talking about. This ignoramus complained this week that Israel's blockade of Gaza is a collective punishment that has destroyed the economy. It is collective punishment that the leaders, presumably Israel leaders, should be held accountable for, he said. The Gaza economy has been destroyed by the blockade. This idiot knows nothing of the history of the Gaza Strip and should know it never had an economy. He should know it is a completely artificial rectangle of real estate whose population is of a size that has nothing to do with the local environment. It's not as if there had been a gold rush that drew all these people into this rectangle and then the gold mines ran dry. Gaza never had an economy. He complained that 70% of Gaza's population is in need of humanitarian assistance, with seemingly no understanding that this is wholly the deliberate responsibility of the Arabs, so that fools like him can witness the poverty and then be told it's the Jews' fault. Gaza's like Williamsburg, Virginia, with its reconstruction of the 18th century colonial capital and the staff and period costumes, working at the period professions. Only in this case, Gaza is a living fossil of slums preserved to display to dopes like Ban Ki-moon in order to blame the Jews.
Oh,
Okay, that's it for this Tuesday night, and I'll be back on Thursday, God willing. Until then, Laila Tov, Me'eretz Yisrael.